You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, I'm Brett.
And I'm Steven.
And we are
the Broadway Husbands.
We're just your all-American married couple making their living in the arts and pursuing a growing family. On the Broadway Husbands podcast, we offer advice from our ordinary lives under extraordinary circumstances.
We are living proof that you can love who you love and love what you do. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss our weekly episodes. And if you really love us, make sure you leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. Take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands.
Members of our Patreon get exclusive access to behind-the-scenes videos, blogs, and other perks, including free apparel and so much more. To become part of our Patreon family, go to patreon.com/Broadway Husbands.
Well, we're going to get kind of personal today.
Yeah. We're going to, you know, we've been on our journey of trying to have a baby for the past, I mean, the journey started when? Like December, November of 2017. It is now, where are we in time? June of 2021. And, you know, there have been so many obstacles that we've had to kind of push through, whether it's life or it has something directly to do with the surrogacy or if it has something to do with the pandemic, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. But, you know, we finally had our first embryo transfer.
Which we did a video about for Gays with Kids, and we talked about the transfer. But what we didn't talk about is the fact that
that it didn't take. So the transfer happened in February, at the beginning of February, and I guess like 2 weeks later, maybe 10 days later, we found out that our surrogate had tested positive for pregnancy, and then at the next blood work, I think they were hoping to hear a heartbeat the next.
They were.
Right? And it was literally like maybe the next week. And they didn't hear a heartbeat, but the numbers had all gone up. So they
so they were like, this is looking good.
Yeah. They were like, it's looking good. And then they scheduled another sonogram or ultrasound. Is it ultrasound?
It's an ultrasound.
Yeah, it is. I'm like, it is an ultrasound sonogram. And then, so this would be the next time. And this was probably like another week later or so. And they were hoping for the heartbeat again. And we, you know, we were there with her virtually. And there was a heartbeat. However, it was really slow. I think it was like 51 beats per minute, and they needed it to be like, what was it?
120.
I mean, like, I think
it was like half.
Yeah, it was half of what it should have been. And after that visit,
it was really hard because like that visit when they were like, oh, we're gonna have to do another ultrasound, and she went back a week later. They did the ultrasound, and there was no heartbeat.
And there was no heartbeat, but
and she immediately cried. Like she immediately on the phone with us just started crying, and I felt horrible. But I felt horrible for her, but wasn't really feeling any feelings myself, like, you know what I mean, until I don't know, 1 or 2 days later it kind of hit me.
So that's interesting, because a lot of my feelings happened the day that we heard the slow heartbeat.
Oh yeah, you were really upset. That's right.
Yeah, I was really upset. I think we did it because her appointments are generally really early in the morning. So I think we did it early in the morning, and then I had to go right to work afterwards. And so I was like, just like spinning, you know?
That's right.
And I on that day is the day that I teach for like a very long period of time. And so I was kind of a disaster. You know, I'm like teaching and trying to stay focused, but like my brain was like thinking about that. And like, I had a couple of times during the day where I was by myself and just cried.
And in the middle of all of this, we were closing on our house.
Yeah.
And we had, the movers had picked up our stuff in New York and were going to randomly call us and tell us when they were bringing our stuff here. And we hadn't closed on the house yet. And we weren't sure if like, we were going to have to figure out where to put our stuff. I mean, it was like, there was so much stress happening. And then this miscarriage happened. And I don't even know that I thought, you know, I've always heard, you know, female friends talk about their miscarriages and how hard they were for them. And I guess because it's, you know, it's not our bodies or something, I didn't realize that that's what was happening. And then then emotionally, I just felt such a sense of like loss and grief. And I mean, we were grieving, and I think it was all happening at the same time as all these stressful situations. And I guess what I really wanted to do was be able to talk about how, like, you know, there's like this shame or something around miscarriages. You know, people don't want to talk about it. We didn't want to talk about it because,
no.
But even with us as two men, you know, that loss was like really real and really sad, you know, because we've wanted to do this for so long, and it's been such hard work and such an investment of time and money. And
it's interesting too, like that was like the day that I was like kind of spinning, right? And then I think I held my breath until the next appointment. And then, you know, when we didn't hear the heartbeat, of course it was super obviously devastating, but I feel like I'd already kind of tried to like prepare myself for, you know, I don't know. I didn't know what to expect. And then I think it was like, I feel like that was a Thursday. For some reason, I feel like it was a Thursday. I don't know why, but I feel like the both of us had this moment like a day or two later where I don't remember what was happening, but we both kind of just like started like crying and hugging. And do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
In the kitchen at the apartment. I don't remember what happened, but something happened. And I think he had kind of like lost it a little bit. And I think I was just like, I don't remember. I wish I could remember specifically what happened, but we just both kind of lost it and both started crying and we hugged each other. And I feel like that was the moment where we kind of grieved it together and accepted like kind of what had actually happened and how devastating it was. And I felt like I was holding my breath for like 2.5 weeks through all of those appointments. And then I finally just like, you know, let go a little bit. And
it's such I think that so much of it was like sort of tied into like, we were getting this house, right? And we made this decision to not go back to New York. And we made this decision to, you know, commit to Steven's job and for me to build my own coaching practice and stay in this, in Texas. And then, and it was really all with the idea of like having this baby. And so then she doesn't get pregnant, and then we're sort of questioning everything, right? We're questioning mm-hmm. all of these decisions, and why are we doing this? And is this going to happen? Mm-hmm. And you sort of like left with so many questions, and you're like making these decisions. We're moving into this house, and we had this bedroom that's going to be the baby's room. Yeah. And we know, like, you know, it's going to happen eventually. It's like not on our terms, but
clearly,
it still doesn't stop you from feeling like, well, the plans and all these decisions and all these things are so uncertain.
Yeah.
And why are we doing them? You know? And mm-hmm. so you just kind of grieve. The grief is like all of those things. And then I think that I mean, I can speak for my own self that like, I don't know that I felt like any of the people in my life, like my parents and my immediate family, even understood that like, for us as a gay couple, a miscarriage still counts. Like it still counts just because it's not our body. It, you know, our hopes and our expectations and our surrogate, who's like somebody we love and care about, mm-hmm. we're going through this together. And I just felt like it was all very like, oh, it'll happen. It's like, no, this is like a real, true grieving process that you have to go through.
Yeah.
And we finally like come out the other side of it.
Yeah.
It took she had to get what they call a procedure called a DNC, which, you know, they were hoping her body would pass the pregnancy on its own.
Naturally, yeah.
But it didn't. Mm-hmm. And about 3 weeks of her just still being pregnant with no heartbeat, mm-hmm. which is horrible.
Right.
We finally were able to schedule what they call a DNC, which mm-hmm. is basically where they go in and scrape out the uterus and and clean it out, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, none of that's covered by insurance, so then we had to pay for that. And you know, those are the things you're just like, and you're going through this process.
It was also like talk about like things being out of your hands. Like we couldn't help, you know, obviously what happened, but then. It's also really frustrating because, you know, we live one place, our surrogate lives another place, our
clinic
is in a completely other place. And so there's a lot of back and forth, and there's only so much calling and emailing that you can do before people actually, I don't want to say do what they're supposed to do, but like before like appointments can be made and, you know, all of those things. So there's a lot of back and forth between multiple parties, and it can be very frustrating. And it feels sometimes like maybe people aren't doing their jobs. And I think that they are, but, you know, individually you just feel like kind of helpless in this situation because you can't help your surrogate. You can't help her get as quickly, you know, the treatment that she needs as quickly as you'd like. And so it's super frustrating. But luckily everything, you know,
she's doing great.
She's doing fantastic.
And we are now expecting to do another transfer.
Yeah.
In
soon. We're not going to say when, we're just going to say soon. Soon.
Another transfer, which will hopefully be the only other transfer we have to do. But it's been quite a feat, and we're gonna have to do exactly what we did last time, but this time maybe it'll be less hectic because the virus isn't quite as bad
and we're all vaccinated and there isn't like that whole that
element
scare, mm-hmm. that scary part of flying and going places and seeing people that you don't normally see and all of those things. And because that was stressful or is stressful still, but you know. Yeah, we're super excited, but the grieving process was like, it was definitely, it overtook me. It took me a long time to finally feel like I snapped out of it, you know, and had energy again. But we're so looking forward to moving forward and getting our baby and making our family. I mean,
it's been crazy.
I think somebody said to us, God, this child is going to be so loved. I'm like, well, one thing is for sure. We are ready. We are so ready. We have a house. We have a room for them. And no matter if we're here or not, I mean, who knows if we'll actually be here.
Right.
Or not. But, you know, but either way, we're so ready and we're so ready to just have our family, you know.
So we thought we would share with you that this is just, I know this is a normal part of the process, but it happened to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, it doesn't always happen to everybody. And, but it's a normal part of trying. And we feel like we need to be able to talk about it so that people know, like, this is something that is could potentially happen.
And to be like totally honest too, you know, right now it's June and this all happened like over 2 months ago now. And we've kind of gone back and forth about talking about it openly. And I've always just been, no, we're not ready. No. And I think now that we're in a better place where we feel much better and have moved on and moved forward, that that I think it's good to talk about it. But I think in the time, in that time period, I just, for me personally, I just wasn't ready.
Yeah, well, we needed to process it.
Yeah, I wasn't ready.
Yeah. I tend to process things out loud anyway, so it helps me, but he doesn't.
I don't. I do not. Yeah. Maybe in therapy a little bit. I mean, yes, in therapy a lot, but like, you know, not out in public for sure. But, you know, I hope that us talking about it is helpful for you and for anyone that may have gone through something similar or, you know, knows somebody. And just know that it's, you know, there's a lot of obstacles. I mean, you know, and it's also funny, like, I always think about, like, wow, there's this, you know, there's this much, like, roller coastering happening, and, like, we don't even have our child yet.
Wait, do we have a kid? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And it's been nuts, because also we're getting a lot of people asking questions about us going back to New York and Broadway, and, you know, Broadway's coming back, and we're not planning on going back anytime soon. I mean, unless we get work. Yeah. And it's like, but things are good here, so why shift it? Why change it? And there's also some great theater here in Houston, so we're going to try to be a part of that and see what happens. But, you know, you feel a lot of pressure. You feel a lot of pressure when all these things are happening.
And now let's move on to a segment we call
Spotlight on Love.
All right. So we have a question from an anonymous person. It's a woman. And do you want to read it?
Sure, I'll read it.
Yeah.
I've been seeing a guy for 3 months now, and it's been going well. He's divorced with 2 kids, and while I know they are his priority, I don't hear from him for days, and then I start to feel like I'm not on top of his list. I'm afraid to say something because I don't want to come off as needy. How do I have a conversation with him about being a priority without coming off as needy?
Huh. Well, so I'll go first, because I feel like my answer is not going to be as good as yours.
Oh, please, I doubt that.
So I think that if it's been going well, right, and clearly, you know, you understand and respect the fact that he has a life, he has had a previous marriage, and he has kids, and he has to, you know, obviously take care of them and be there for them. I think if you call him or meet him in person and obviously just start up a conversation and just say, hey, like, I understand you have all these things, and I understand that they're a priority, but with the way things are going and the fact that they're going so well, I want you to be a priority to me, and I would like to be a part of that list. I don't need to be the top of the list, but I would like to be in on the list. So if you feel this way, you know, you need to include me. And if you want this to go further, then that needs to happen. And if not, then this needs to probably end, because you know what I mean, right?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like
you need to just be upfront.
I think I know this person, so I know they're like where they're at in their life and their dating history a little bit. So that's why we're keeping them anonymous. And so I think some people, depending on your priorities, like if you really want to have a family, let's say, or you really had some terrible dating situations, we can put so many of our like eggs in this one basket when we start seeing somebody new, especially if it really is going well. And that can really make us feel like you have to try to make this one work. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important you remember that the universe is abundant, that God has, like, there's plenty of people out there. There's someone, you know, if this isn't the person, it's okay. It's like negotiating on a job, right?
Right.
It's like walking away is the best
way to, being willing to walk away is the best way to like negotiate. And so I think just being okay by saying, by don't worry about it if you sound needy, like that's not the concern. What you should be concerned about is being able to fully express what you want and ask for what you want from a place of authenticity. And it's not necessarily based out of fear from your history or based out of fear of the future, but it's really based on like, hey, you know, if this is, if we can't have it this way right now in this moment, then I don't know that this can work. And you need to be okay with that.
Yeah. And I think that if you are really clear with what you want, then when you say that and you come off as confident and clear, I don't think that could sound needy. And if it does sound needy to them, then, you know, then you need to move on. You know what I mean? Then it's just, it's not meant to be. And there are other fish in the sea.
Yeah. But don't wait to have the conversation, because the longer you wait, the more you're going to like create the fake, the, your version of the conversation in your head. And the version of the conversation in your head is always going to be worse than the actual conversation.
Right.
You know, so like the sooner you have the conversation and get it over with, the better. And if this guy really likes you, then he's going to hear you and he's going to listen to you. And he's going to say like, oh my gosh, you're right, I'm not doing this. Or he's going to say like,
well, this is what needs
to happen. This is what's happening with my kids, and I'm unfortunately not able to do more than this at this time. And that's something that's good information to have.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to remember that no matter what age we are, that texting is not the way to have a conversation like this, right? It has to be in person, or at least on the phone or FaceTime or whatever. You know what I mean? You have to have like a real human interaction and not something that's written. I don't think that, you know, I don't think that that's what they're saying, but just in general, as a rule, I think we just need to all be reminded of that, because sometimes there's still a lot of texting that happens. I mean, you know, I just call, meet up, see the person in person,
have a conversation face to face as much as you can.
Yeah.
Love that. Okay. Yeah. Well, good luck. Let us know how that's going. And if you want us to answer your questions, make sure you shoot us
a DM,
on Instagram, or shoot us an email at broadwayhusbands.com. And we are happy to answer your question on our next podcast. Thanks for listening to the Broadway Husbands podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. And while you're at it, leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on.
Don't forget to check out Broadway Life Apparel and our new designs that are released every month. Thanks to our Patreon patrons. Don't forget to join our family by going to patreon.com/Broadway Husbands.
And a big shout out to the Broadway Podcast Network. Go to bpn.fm/husbands to check out the wide array of Broadway themed podcasts for your listening pleasure. And on this podcast, we encourage you to love who you love
and love what you do.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.